Welcome to Cord Killer's Reckoning. The world of entertainment is turned upside down, and we are just trying to find out how to watch what we want, where we want, whenever we want. I'm Tom Merritt. Where's the good stuff, Brian?
Oh, my goodness. I have no idea, but I have a good feeling we're about to find out. If only we could... What's the name of our first segment?
Go on a supply run?
Yes, that's what we should do.
Will affect you in the future.
A lot of people have told us a lot of things on this show, Brian, and we appreciate that. We love getting people's opinions. But a lot of people have told me very insistently that Netflix would fail with its password sharing crackdown. A lot of people have told us very insistently that Netflix's content is too stale and people are going to start abandoning it. And people have told us very insistently that, you know what Netflix should do? They should buy one of those studios. Amazon did it with MGM, and Netflix better take some of that cash and buy a studio. I myself have insisted very insistently, Brian, that yes. Netflix is not going to get into live sports until late this year or early next year. And then it's going to be with a niche sport, you know, like surfing or ping pong or something.
I think at one point we had talked about pickleball as being their sport of choice.
Because Netflix said it didn't want to rent a sport. Wanted to control it. All of us, all of you, all of me, some of Brian were wrong. We were absolutely wrong. Last week, Netflix signed a deal to carry almost all of the WWE. We'll go into that in a minute. Netflix also reported record subscriber signups, profitability, and declared they have no interest in buying a studio. Netflix added a record 13.1 million subscribers in Q4 for a total of 260.8 million worldwide, far exceeding estimates, and also putting it far ahead of all its streaming competitors. Netflix earned $2.11 per share and projected it would double that, more than double that, next quarter with $4.49 a share. That's profitability. And in its earnings report, Netflix said, "We're not interested in acquiring linear assets, nor do we believe that further M&A among traditional entertainment companies will materially change the competitive environment." Well, I forgot one, Brian. A lot of people said, nobody's going to pay for ads on Netflix. Nobody's going to buy the ad-supported plan. Made up 40% of its new signups.
I guess let's get ads out of the way. Nobody likes to talk about ads, including you and me, who, may I remind most of our listeners, depend on ads for our living. You know, it's
the ads. Have I told you about my great mattress lately? No, I'm just kidding.
Right. In the how do they do that box?
Tube of collagen makes me look young.
The ad thing is interesting because the scene benefit is the money. That's what you get to tell the board of directors. The unseen detriment is the fact that they are chipping away at their prestige. And prestige,
are they,
is
though?
One of those,
you always those say
mushy
that.
Mushy words.
But are they?
Well, let me put it this way. Before this announcement, were they farther away from Tubi or what's the free ad-supported one?
They're not even in the same arena as Tubi or Pluto or Zumo.
Pluto, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
Pluto today?
They are much farther away from Pluto at 260.8 million subscribers worldwide.
Okay, but
paying subscribers, mind you.
cordkillers@gmail.com. I feel like that's one of those things that you can't see it immediately, but it is a step in that direction of
doesn't seem to be having an effect. It seems like there are people like you and me who are like, I don't know, ads, blah. There are people like folks in our audience who are like, never, I will never do that. And I canceled. I will prove that I will never do it. And you mean what you say. And then there's the 40% of new signups that were like, oh, it's only $6.99. Great. Yeah, I'll take that. I don't care about ads. It's fine.
Actually, you know what? I think you described just now everybody under the age of 27.
I think right? And like, if I'm Netflix, like, that's the
when
right.
When you said those words, I thought, like, did my daughter just show up? What just happened?
And that's your growth market, right? You want to serve the young market because they'll just get more money as they get older and want to upgrade to the ad-free program someday.
Okay, so I withdraw my frustration with that. It's sort of, if anything, is sort of like a forgive me. I know some people get annoyed when Brian goes all branding head, but it's like, for example, Toyota, when they wanted to create a new luxury line, they didn't call it a Toyota Supreme. They called it a Lexus.
Sure.
And they wanted to create a affordable young person line. They made up a new name of Scion, the XA and the XB or whatever. And I don't think that line survived, but let's say it had. And in fact, they may bring it back because now those people who were 16 years old when they bought a Scion XB are now 35 years old. And they're all like, if they came back with a Scion XX and it's like badass, I could picture that happening or whatever. And I suppose there might be kind of a same version of the same thing happening in the ad supportive universe.
I think Netflix is Toyota, not Lexus. And Netflix is saying, hey, you know what? We know you love the Corolla. How about a Camry?
Now, wait a minute. So if that's true, then that means,
and I don't think Netflix like is a prestige idea. Brand. I think no, that's no, what
I,
I'm saying.
I rather like this idea.
Yeah.
Like what is better than a Netflix? Like, so that is, oh my God, I think you just blew my mind, Tom. It's like, brands do establish a territory and they tend to chip away at their own prestige. And then they tend to launch another brand that is higher prestige. Are we waiting on an even more supreme version of Netflix than Netflix? I don't
know. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? You know, like Netflix is very clearly linear television. Like we've thought about it because we've followed it for so long as like, oh, it's House of Cards, it's prestige, it's we want to become HBO before HBO becomes us. But in reality, what they are starting to wrap their heads around is they didn't become HBO, they became ABC, CBS, and NBC. And they're starting to realize, you know what? I think we should be fine with that. That's a bigger audience anyway. And what those broadcast networks did was sell ads, so let's do that. But it does leave that question open of like, okay, but if we did want to launch an HBO, what would that look like? And I
do want to respond to that. In the comments, Lon Makes is saying, is Brian arguing brand dilution like with Max? There was no dilution with the word Max. The only way to dilute the brand was to involve HBO. And that is something that I still... I plant my flag on the top of this hill and maintain that I was right the entire time. And that not only was I right, but HBO knew I was right. And slowly everybody else is realizing that I was right on that one.
Now, here's the other thing. Netflix said, we don't need to do ads. Now they're doing ads. They're doing ads to the point that Canada and the UK, they're getting rid of the basic tier altogether. If you're on the basic tier, you're going to have to either move to the cheaper ad tier or move up to the more expensive medium tier. And they're going to do that worldwide.
It's a little bit like for those who are not crazy political people. If you're a normal person and you have a friend who's an anarcho-capitalist or
where are we going? What's going on here? I was just doing that as a throwaway mention before I moved to a new topic. We're talking about anarcho-capitalism.
Counselor, let me see if I can land this. It is a little bit like there are two forms of taxation. There's direct taxation with, you know, we take some of your paycheck, and then there's inflation as a tax. You have the Fed just print more money, and now all your money is worth a little bit less. So likewise, you won't increase. You could either choose to increase the cost of Netflix, or you can dilute and add support more of it.
Gotcha. No, I see where you're going.
Did that land or no?
No, it did land. I wasn't going there though, so that's right. Fine. It was a lovely diversion though. What I was saying is that Netflix loves the ad program so much that they're actually like getting rid of the alternate option. As a point of saying, and here's where I was starting before I lost my momentum. Netflix said we don't going to do ads. Now they're all in on ads. Netflix said, we never want to own sports. I don't know, live. We definitely don't need to do live sports. Now they're doing the WWE, which we're going to talk about still in a second. Stay with us. Netflix said they wouldn't crack down on passwords. They took it as a compliment. And they're totally cracking down on passwords. And apparently it's having a good effect. So, Brian, my thought is Netflix very clearly in their earnings report said, we are not interested in acquiring linear assets. So when do they start acquiring the linear assets?
Like they're perpetually opposite day.
Yeah.
So it's like, you might as well figure out when is opposite day.
We don't need ads. We're totally doing ads.
Okay. So I guess we'll start with linear assets. I hadn't really thought about that. I don't know.
That means buying a studio, basically. It's a long-winded way of saying like picking up a cable channel or a studio or something like that. Like Netflix is saying, we're not going to go buy Lionsgate. We're not going to go buy Paramount, for goodness sake. We're just not into that. So my question is, when do they change their mind to go, you know, we said that, but we want to launch this premium version of Netflix.
Oh man, you know what? Now you got me all kerfuffled. Because I want to say that they're right to not want to ever do that, because that would be silly and taking on way too much friction to do it that way. But they've done a lot of other dumb stuff. So
and a lot of the stuff we thought was dumb turned out to work really well so far.
Well, and. So
in the one in that the didn't hearing, was Quickster. I mean, we can cheer about that.
well, what they're describing they want to do is something closer to how they began with Netflix Originals, which is buy other stuff like Lillehammer that is, you know, in faraway parts of the world, and claim their originals. Then they went all in on their own productions with House of Cards, and then they, you know, folded like a house of cards. And now they're saying they want to go back to being the efficient way of doing things. That one is, that to me is the coin flip, is the one that I can't possibly predict one way or the other.
Let's finally get to WWE. TKO Holdings runs WWE, runs wrestling, and Netflix announced a 10-year deal that will let Netflix stream Raw worldwide, starting in Canada, the US, and the UK, as well as Latin America. And then outside the US, it also will be streaming the rest of WWE shows, SmackDown, NXT, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble. The only reason they're not doing those in the US is that Peacock has the rights to stream those in the US. Netflix will also be allowed to develop movies and series around WWE characters, which I think gives us a little insight about why they wanted to do this particular deal. And this will be the last year for Raw on the USA network. Next year, it will move to Netflix. Netflix has the right to opt out of the deal after 5 years if they don't think it's going well, but they also have the right to extend it for an additional 10 years and make it a 20-year deal if they think it's going well. So TKO, given Netflix a lot of latitude to try this out and see if it works for them.
Tom, there is so much to unpack here, but I think we all agree that the most important part was how right was Brian when he said that it wouldn't be a major sport. It would be an esoteric one.
Ooh, is it an esoteric one? I think that's a good question.
Some might say it, not me, but some might say it's not even a sport.
That's the weird thing with WWE is I was saying the same thing. I was like, they're going to go with the niche sport. I don't think wrestling is niche. Wrestling's pretty mainstream. It's real popular.
So it is. Oh, that's interesting. So niche sport becomes like, so now we're,
you
we're
said it better when you said niche. Esoteric, because you can make an argument like, well, wrestling is very popular, but it's also esoteric.
Right. But is it niche? It's definitely, well, it's mainstream. So I guess not niche.
Yeah.
But sport. I think legally you can't claim it is.
I mean, I guess that could be our out. If we want to go that route and get a bunch of people upset with us, we could say, whoa, wrestling's not a sport. Therefore we're right. They didn't buy a sport, but
no, I mean, it's not a sport. It's better than a sport. It's wonderful, beautiful performance.
It's
art.
Indistinguishable Weird. From a sport, right? The question of whether it's a sport or not has to do with how much of it is scripted, how much of it is, you know, unknown before it happens. Honestly, what's fun about sport? Watching the story play out. And in that respect, wrestling is a sport.
Well, and mapping out onto the story as it unfolds,
yeah,
various aspects of it. It's like, well, the Cincinnati fans be all like, you know, blank and so on. Was it Max Landis? He wrote Wrestling's Not Wrestling or Wrestling Isn't Real or something like that. But he did a 30-minute think piece that I thought was really, really good, where he said, hey, when you go, essentially, these are my words, not his, but he was like, when you go watch Hamlet, does Hamlet bleed out of the theater into real life? No, that's right. When the actor who plays Hamlet, when he cheats on his wife, does that bleed on stage? No, it doesn't. Not so with wrestling, my right? friends.
Yeah, like, very much like sports.
Exactly. It's more real than you could possibly hope for.
Yeah. So yeah, we could get caught up in that, but frankly, I'm gonna say like this is sports for the sake of what we were talking about, whether Netflix would want to get into live sports or not. This is sports. And I will go further and say, this is the smartest sport. How did we not see this? Because what Netflix gets isn't control. Although I sort of floated the idea in my Substack newsletter that, you know what, if Netflix is smart, they might want to buy TKO Holdings at some point, the way they bought Miller World. But the reason I said that is because you get content out of WWE. You can turn, you know, Formula One racing into a great documentary series. Netflix has absolutely done that, but I'm not sure what else you do other than highlight shows and commentary shows. WWE gives you people that can star in films and TV shows, either acting as other people or as their characters from the WWE. And it gives you storylines and other things that you can turn into television and movies, which is perfect for Netflix, not to mention video games, which Netflix is also wanting to build up in.
So before I say any more words, let me remind people that our email address is courtkillers@gmail.com. And if you disagree with anything I'm about to say, feel free to jump in there. But Formula One, most sports basically boil down to a random noise generator plus characters over time.
Personality, right?
Yeah, exactly. Whether they're personality is a better word, because that reminds you that they can be personalities that aren't even, you know, they can be cities of personality and so on. If they were able to do it with F1, then why not hook up with the masters of this game? People who've been playing it for the longest time, who are the best at crafting these narratives. Even on the Chris Rock special, we saw like there was a flub that had to get corrected or whatever comedy special. We had whatever the reality show was, where there was a technical hiccup or prop something along the way. There's nothing that could go wrong in pro wrestling. And that sounds hyperbolic, but I mean, by definition, whatever happens, you continue to move the goalposts to say, well, that was part of the story too.
Yeah. Uniquely so, right? I think this will go well. Now, Netflix is going to have a streaming issue. I'm going to predict that. I'm going to call that. There's going to be a streaming issue because this is incredibly more complex live streaming enterprise that they're about to enter into. And I'm not saying that they're going to have a problem because they don't know what they're doing. It's just when you level up, you run into an unanticipated problem. So there's going to be a streaming issue, but I don't think it will be deadly. It'll make a lot of headlines and a bunch of people will say, oh, Netflix has failed, but it really won't matter. They'll recover from it. It'll become fine the way that so many other streaming services like HBO Now had their problems and then became fine. And then I think this is going to succeed for Netflix. I think there's a chance they buy TKO. But even if they don't buy TKO, I think when the Peacock deal comes up for renewal, Netflix will probably, if this is going well, snap up the rest of the rights and get them all inside of Netflix.
Just to close the loop on old business, did WWE use BAM, the Major League Baseball?
Oh, when it was running its own thing? I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember what service they used. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But whatever it is, this will all be on Netflix's new
situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We, on the other hand, are not on Netflix's servers, nor do we get paid by Netflix to stream. But we do it anyway, Brian, because of viewers like you.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up because I have this new idea. Now, I have two options. Option one is that you and I should encourage everybody to do a write-in ballot campaign to Netflix.
For the saying, New Hampshire.
Hey, Netflix, you should give money to Cord Killers because they're really great and they talk about you a lot.
Yeah. Okay. I like this. Good option.
Or it could go to our friend Pat Rion, aka patreon.com/cordkillers, and give us money directly. I don't really have a sense of which one is the better idea, because if they go to patreon.com/cordkillers for just a buck an episode, they could keep us loud, live, and independent, where we will increasingly get better about giving about delivering episodes on time as we fix all of our RSS feeds. Which one do you think would be better?
I'm looking at this calendar that Patreon gave me this year.
What? They gave you a calendar?
It says, listen to yourself.
They didn't give me a calendar.
This wasn't about that.
No, it is now.
I'll send you the calendar.
No, that's fine. I know what date it is.
If we get 5 new patrons, I'll buy you a calendar.
Okay. All right. I'm okay with that.
Patreon.com/cordkillers.
By the way, you get benefits. You, in theory, as soon as we're able to stream smooth everything out, you'll get early access to spoiler room time and, of course, exclusive access to, and that part is true, our after talk segments where we keep the real insights. Everything we're saying right now is a lie. And then as soon as we're done, we're like, hey, got him. Now, what do we really think?
Exactly. You'll just have to search and find out. That's why our next segment is called The Search Party.
Why is it dogs again?
Because they're searching. They're the hounds. Oh, they're out searching for the news for us.
All right.
Yeah. What? There they go.
Look,
good boy.
To be honest, the entire episode could be nothing but that sound, and I'll be fine.
It might end up being that. I don't seem to be able to turn it off.
Many people say that's already what it is.
All right. Jon Stewart is joining The Daily Show as an executive producer and will host Mondays. The rotating cast will still host the rest of the week. We made a big deal out of the fact that they were like, we're not hiring a host. And then, like, as soon as we got done saying that, as soon as I pressed publish on that episode, Jon Stewart's like, psych, I'm going to be the host, but only on Mondays. And I'm returning to be a showrunner.
Well, good for him. Maybe it'll turn into something.
I like this guy. Yeah, I think he's got moxie. No, We spent a lot of time before the show running through various scenarios of why we think Jon Stewart would be doing this. I floated the idea that he got tired of doing The Daily Show and was like, I just want to go off and try my own thing now. This was Craig Kilborn's thing. I want to try my own thing. And now he has done that and then said, you know what? That was fun. I did that. Let me go back to something I'm familiar with.
Well, and there's also the possibility that he didn't like, working very hard 20 hours a day every single day of the week and would like to only work hard one day of the week.
Although he's going to be a showrunner, so theoretically he might be working hard other days of the week, just not hosting the show.
But I definitely
with you that he probably was like, okay, if you want me to host the show, great, but I'm not doing it every day. That's too much work.
I think the real option is, it's not that he went out and failed on his own. I don't think that it's that he, to be honest, I think it's just that, it's a gig he loves. It's a gig he's very good at. It's a gig.
His buddy, Stephen Colbert, still involved
is
as a producer,
unbelievably taxing, unfortunately. And what does Comedy Central want? They wanted whatever causes the words Jon Stewart to be associated with The Daily Show again. What'll it take?
That's what Comedy Central wants. I can see Colbert sitting down with Jon, and Jon's talking about his next thing, like, oh, that Apple thing, what a pain, didn't work out, whatever. And Colbert's like, what?
Yeah, you know what was a pain was watching it. Ba-dum-bum.
Hey. I wonder if Colbert doesn't pitch him on like, why don't you know, you keep talking about wanting to train the next generation. Why don't you come back to The Daily Show as a producer and train the next generation? You could show them how it's done once a week and they could learn at your feet and try it themselves later on.
Yeah, I could see that. Also, like, there's a certain level where you and I have probably read the same books that say that after a certain point, there are diminishing returns on the happiness that is associated with money that you get. And he's probably well above whatever that number is. Mm-hmm. And so now he's probably more interested in the autonomy and more interested in the purpose and life fulfillment aspects of things.
Indeed.
Also, it would probably be nice for anybody to be watching you again.
Yeah, there's that too. In a report analyzing TV viewership in the U.S. throughout 2023, Nielsen found that Suits beat a record previously held by The Office for number of minutes watched in a single year. Now, granted, Suits had more episodes in its seasons than The Office did, so maybe it was a little easier, but it's a big deal. And 2023's overall streaming chart was identical to the overall acquired streaming chart. In other words, no originals were in the top 10 of streaming last year. The top 20, the top 10 overall streaming programs were Suits, Bluey, NCIS, Grey's Anatomy, Cuckoo Melon, The Big Bang Theory, Gilmore Girls, Friends, Heartland, and Supernatural. Number one original was Ted Lasso, but at 16.9 billion minutes viewed, it was well behind Supernatural's 22.8 million.
Let me throw you a pitch, and you can decide whether or not it's valid or not. But two things about Suits. Number one, it was relatively, I would say, far lesser known than The Office, and it got a very prominent, very attractive preview when you went to Netflix on there.
Sure. And it was available on Peacock, not just Netflix. So tiny little base there.
Right. And on top of that, Suits has a runtime of 42 minutes as opposed to The Office's 26 minutes. So every single episode of Suits is kind of batting two for one on there. None of that is a declaration of my perceived value of Suits one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah. But that can explain why Suits beats The Office. Especially, I think there's a lot to the mechanics of it being longer episodes, more episodes and all that. That certainly plays a part. Combined with there were more people that hadn't watched it when it suddenly caught viral attention.
Well, and again, like that particular, or at least the one that was displayed to me, was a very engaging 30-second segment on there. Right? I don't even remember what it was. It was just somebody being a badass. And I'm like,
what do you make of no originals in the top overall streaming programs?
I can only speak, I can't speak tactically or strategically. I can only speak emotionally to that.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because of our next story. Like I wish more of the originals. I want there to be more Stranger Things is, you know, I want there to be more originals that come out of nowhere.
I think it's because streaming is mainstream now. And if you were to count up, let's go back 1997. If you were to count up the number of people who watched Friends and then the number of people who watched reruns of Cheers.
Got it.
And cable television, you probably would end up with more people watching Cheers than watching Friends.
I believe the record remains with MASH of most simultaneous viewers of all time. However, those people have aged out of the stream. They missed out on the streaming window. They're just not getting caught up.
I'm more saying more people watch old stuff because new originals, there are, 10 of. Old acquired shows, there are 1,000 of. You've just got more to choose from there. And you have a record. People are like, well, I've heard this is good from a bunch of other people. An original, especially if it's in its first season, you're like, I don't know. I guess it's good. Some people say it's good. Not that many people have watched it yet. It's brand new. So I think it's natural for older shows to stream more. The reason we haven't seen it in the past is because we didn't have that many streamers. We had a lot of people who were going to streaming only to watch new things, and they're still watching cable or broadcast TV for old things. We're now getting more people going to streaming to watch old things.
Well, and I guess that would match up nice with the Suits theory of like the reason it was popular is because it seemed, as far as anybody under the age of 25 knows, to have come out of nowhere and suddenly like, well, that's fun. I guess I'll pop in on that.
All right. Netflix's Last Airbender trailer is out and it will premiere on February 22nd. You've watched the trailer. You love this show. You have criticized other efforts to turn it into a live action. What do you think of this?
No. I've criticized people who have criticized efforts to.
But also, you weren't a big fan of the M. Night version. I'm just saying.
No. In fact, I never saw it. But I was aware that there was an M. Night version. And I said, guys, never stop believing. And you remember I said the same thing about Cowboy Bebop. I said the same thing about a bunch of other things. But by golly, Tom, did I get chills looking at this trailer, knowing that it's the same producer creators behind it as the cartoon, and seeing them get so many things right, or at least right-ish. It's hard to do comedic timing in real time when you don't have the opportunity to animate it down to the individual cell. But by golly, I believe Arcane was great. And this could be great too.
I trust you on this. So I'm now officially excited. Cause I've only watched a few episodes of the original. I never watched the M. Night one either. But I'll give this one a try. February 22nd, Last Airbender, Avatar, The Last Airbender comes to Netflix. A couple other notes here. Squid Game Season 2 will premiere in 2024. So if you're excited about another Squid Game, it is coming this year alongside Bridgerton and The Diplomat. And Severance Season 2, the Apple TV Plus show, has returned to production. So it's not coming soon because they're just returning to production, but it is back in production. So you will get a Season 2 of Severance.
Can't wait. Very excited for the return of more Severance in my life. It's so interesting because Severance was one of my BFFs during the pandemic. And then the moment the pandemic ended, everybody started fighting
strikes.
Again.
Yeah. All right, let's dig for some buried treasure. Brian, what have you been watching lately?
So last week, especially in the After Talk segment, I did a fair bit of explanation of The Beekeeper. And as I described, a few days later, my daughter wanted to go see The Beekeeper. So we went and I watched it a second time. And I realized, oh, wait, the reason I knew all the beats of The Beekeeper is because it's just nobody except for Sillier. And sure enough, she was like, let's watch Nobody. And so we watched Nobody with Bob Odenkirk. And by golly, is it classy, fun. It is tantric in its pacing compared to The Beekeeper. And I think better for it. It's just great.
Yeah. I've seen Nobody, and Nobody was tantric is a perfect word for it. It's super enjoyable. Like
it's just every scene just makes everybody's shadow longer, both on Bob Odenkirk's side, on his family side, on his governmental entity side, on the protector of the Obshack side. It's like I don't know what's going on, but it's been 45 minutes and I've been interested the whole time. I can't wait for this rubber band to snap.
Indeed.
What about you? What have you been watching?
I just started Dr. Slump, available on Netflix. It's about two medical professionals who were rivals in high school for like top grades and now have both hit hard times. One of them is a plastic surgeon who is accused of malpractice, although it does appear there might have been some kind of shady underworld influence on him that he was not aware of. But his patient was from Macau, you know, the casino city. So there's some implications there. And then the other is a woman who works as an anesthesiologist and just has like a horrible boss. And so she's suffering from depression and ends up quitting her job because her doctor, her mental health professional is like, You wouldn't keep running with a broken leg. You wouldn't just put on the crutches and say, let me finish the race. You rehabilitate. He's like, you need to do that with your brain. So these two then meet again. They hated each other in high school, but can they become friends now is sort of your romance story there. But it's pretty good. Just a couple episodes in, but so far so good.
And that's on which?
That is on Netflix.
Okay.
Netflix. Netflix.
Never heard of it.
Also, I finished up Welcome to Somdelry and My Demon, and they were both fun and wonderful. So you've heard me talk about them in the past, but my opinion did not change on either one of those. If you got something we should look out for, email us, folks, cordkillers@gmail.com. And then Brian will buy you what? What will you buy people if they
know? You know what I'll do is I'll buy you a taco when you come on out to my home here at Modern Rogue World
Really?
Quarters. Yes. You know, I don't know if you know this, Tom, but we do a little thing called the Founders Day Picnic.
We invite
all of the 999 people who founded this wonderful establishment, plus literally anybody else who wants to come and help
and
us.
And you hired the moon. I think that's the most impressive part.
And that's a tough booking. I had to book it a long time in advance. Some people might accuse me of actually having set Founders Day on April 8th of 2024, specifically just so that the moon could make an appearance. To those people, I say, you're right.
That's
the
exactly
moon
what happened.
Will be making a special appearance where it will perform its signature dance of standing under the sun and causing a big shadow over all of us. Yeah, dude, there's going to be a total solar eclipse. This is the biggest thing. I've been quiet about it up until about last week. I'm about to get very, very loud because we've been preparing for it for a very long time. We're a little over half of all the slots sold. Head on over to scamstuff.com. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to hang out. You're going to hang out with Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood and all of our friends over at Ice Cream Social, all of our friends over at We're Not Wrong, all of our friends of Jomo and the Possum Posse will be there, he says, as he looks at his watch to make sure to call them. And most importantly, George Robb will perform all of Dark Side of the Moon on the piano in 26 minutes, ending with the very last chords of the track Eclipse as the eclipse happens. It's going to be absolutely magical. Please be there. We booked the VFW hall next door, and we have friends of the show who have 20 acres of camping space. If you need a place to park your vehicles, it's going to be a big one. Scamstuff.com. Please be there.
Fantastic. Time to scan the horizon. Does that sound like rain or just somebody taking a pee?
Yes. Oh, there. Geez. Okay. That's a certain kind of person taking a pee. that's Zeus after a bender.
Okay. As of now, Amazon Prime Video comes with ads in Canada, Germany, the US, and the UK. Soon that will happen in France, Italy, Spain, Mexico, and Australia. If you want to get rid of the ads, you pay an extra $3 a month. So this is a different way than other people have done it. Other streaming services have said, we now have an ad-free tier. It's available for cheaper. You want to pay less? Sign up for the ad-free tier. They may or may not have done that after raising the price of the tier you're on, but yes, that's usually how they do it. Amazon is saying, you have the same tier. We're not raising your price, but it now has ads. So if you want to raise your price, that's up to you. Pay $3 extra a month. Morgan Stanley forecasts that Prime Video ads are expected to generate $3.3 billion in revenue in 2024, probably hit $5 billion in 2025 and $7 billion in 2026. Amazon says Prime Video's ad load per hour will be 2 to 3.5 minutes below traditional TV and most streamers, and expects 195 million monthly viewers, mostly because that's how many people already have it, and they're just putting ads in there. So it's instantly going to give them more ad impressions than starting a new tier and making people sign up for it.
So I know it's not a direct parallel, but this feels a little bit like politically speaking, the direct taxation versus inflation to reduce the value of the dollars that you have. It's like, you know, you're still paying the same amount. It's just, you know, we're just going to squirt some ads in there. And then they could keep on squirting more and more ads and nobody will really notice the difference on there.
Yeah. And if you are someone who's like, oh, man, I don't want these ads, Amazon can, you know, easily say like, great, $3 a month. That's how much your eyeballs are worth to us in ads. But if you give
it's half per eyeball.
So it's $1.50 per eyeball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. Or $1.49 per eyeball?
I mean, I don't know.
$49.50
has one functioning eyeball. So
anyway, roughly $1.50 per eyeball. So there you go. Amazon Prime Video, don't forget, it now has ads. Peacock added 3 million subs last quarter to reach 31 million subscribers. May I remind you, Netflix hit 260 million. But anyway, Peacock reached 31 million subscribers. That's up 50% on the year. That does not include 2.8 million new subscriptions that Antenna estimates were added after that January 13th NFL playoff game that Peacock had the exclusive rights to.
That's interesting, because I would have figured out, or I would have figured that that the subs would be before that exclusive, not after or as a result.
So in case I was confusing, Comcast had their earnings report, and in the earnings report, they tell you, here's how many subs we had at the end of Q4 at December 31st.
I see. So and that no was 31 million subs.
Got it. They added 3 million subs last quarter, and as of the end of December, 31 million subs. Antenna looked at its stats and said, I think they almost got 3 million subs just off that one playoff game in January, but that won't be reported by Comcast until after Q2.
But it would make sense that the excitement generated by the game would be the causal factor. Got it.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. They're saying like, we're looking at our numbers and we think on January 13th, they added 2.8 million subscriptions.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the Oscar nominations came out. Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig did not get nominations for Barbie, but America Ferrera and Ryan Gosling did. Greta Gerwig was up for Best Actress. Ryan Gosling and America Ferrera were up for Best Supporting Actor and Actress. So there's been a lot of people talking about that. As far as we're concerned, Netflix won the nomination race with 18 nominations, followed by Apple with 13. However, you might see Disney listed as having 20, which is bigger than 18. We do agree with you on that. But usually you count Disney across its multiple studios like Searchlight, 20th Century, Pixar, et cetera. So technically Disney as a studio has more than Netflix, but Netflix only has one studio and Disney has multiple studios.
Please somebody clarify this fog in my mind. If I had more time today, I would have chased this weasel down, but I believe there was some disagreement about whether or not Barbie was a musical or a comedy, or like there was some category nonsense.
There was some category nonsense involved with the Golden Globes too. And I don't remember which category nonsense was the Golden Globes and which one was the Oscars.
Yeah. But I believe there was some amount of nonsense. Tom, I'm beginning to think there's some nonsense about these awards ceremonies.
Whoa, Brian, wait a minute. Are you saying that these might not be purely objective evaluations of absolute quality?
I don't know. Part of me wonders if maybe this isn't just a big party where people can get drunk and give each other awards for themselves.
Well, Brian, as someone who has won a podcasting award in the past, I can say they're very heavy.
What is that award?
This is the best new news web series for Tech News Today 2012 from the International Academy of Web Television.
Okay, so do me a favor, hold it. Okay, hold it. Wait, hold it very close to the cord killers thing that you have, and tell me that doesn't look kind of like it's a middle finger.
Yep. Definitely does.
Definitely. Which I wonder if might not have been intentional.
By the way, thank you to Jason Howell, who like carted that in his luggage from Northern California down here to LA to give it to me. Like that.
Is he in LA now?
No, he was just traveling here on the weekend and brought me that insanely heavy award in his suitcase.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the chatter. We're not trying to equivocate. We're not trying to equivocate. We're also not trying to
obliviate.
We're not trying to say you're geese.
We're also not trying to ethicate. We ain't here to
try not to hate. Love your mate. Don't suffocate on your own hate. TJ Asher wrote, "Hey killers, I think there is something wrong with the RSS feed. I haven't seen an episode since December 21st using the Apple Podcast app. Looked on Patreon, saw there were new episodes there. So happy the show's still going." Shrug.
There is something wrong. And that thing, there's one cog in the machine that is underperforming. And its name is Brian Brushwood. I thought I was uploading a thing to the right place. It turns out I wasn't. Look at this. I put this new logo on there. It just like it's ready.
We're working on it. Lovely. Can we get one of those under construction GIFs?
Yeah.
And add that as well. And then Alex says, just an FYI, The Avengers, meaning the Emma Peel and Mr. Steed Avengers, not the superhero Avengers, have been rebooted, reworked, and published in comic form for quite a while now under the title Steed and Mrs. Peel to avoid obvious copyright and trademark issues, especially in comic publishing. Now, I will insert myself and say, you can't trademark a title, so they were well within their rights to just call it The Avengers, but also the fact that you can't trademark a title wouldn't mean that Marvel might not come and sue you for lots of things anyway, so it's probably smart for them to just go, you know what, let's call it Steed and Mrs. Peel and avoid the whole thing. Grant Morrison wrote one in the 90s, and Mark Waid more recently, about 10 years ago. Thank you, Alex, for that.
Yeah, and I guess along those same lines, if you both had the same title and very similar characters, then you might be more attractive for a lawsuit than if you only just had characters who were similar to other characters.
Yeah.
By example, I cite The Watchmen. I mean, it's very clear. There's a Batman. There's a Superman, there's a, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
And the Avengers with John Steed is a, you know, private investigator. It's 60s. It's, you know, it's not really anything the same as the Avengers, but there are villains that have superpowerish things sometimes. And certainly SHIELD is a secret organization. And like, there's just enough there that you're probably like, you know what, let's just call it something else. To mention, a lot of people will see the Avengers on a cover and assume it's the superheroes. So you just got, you know, customer confusion on top of it.
Yeah. Just in general, how about, let's say we don't paint a Target right
on
our chest.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm Target Man. That's my superpower.
I'm Don't Shoot Me Man. I'm going to try not to be a Target Man. Well, folks, that brings us to the end of a lovely show. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And I reckon we'll talk to you next time.